You can't save someone who is not willing to participate in their own rescue. My name is Andrea, and this is Adult Child. Welcome back to Adult Child, where we take a deep dive into the impact of growing up in a dysfunctional family. Ahoy, my dear shit shows. For any new listeners, my name is Andrea. I am a total and complete shit show. I am the captain of this hot mess of a ship where we talk about what to do when you realize your childhood screwed you up more than you thought. The podcast where we talk about serious shit, but we don't take ourselves too seriously. We curse here. You've been warned. I'm an acquired taste. You've been warned. So welcome aboard. So today, folks, we are diving deep with returning guest, somatic coach Marina Treiner. So it's been a few years since Marina was last on the pod, and it's actually been a few years since her and I have talked. And so we ended up exchanging DMs on Sunday, and we just decided, hey, like, let's do an impromptu episode tomorrow. We didn't plan anything. We didn't talk about what it was going to be about. And y'all, I had no idea what sort of a doozy of a conversation this was going to turn into. This is not a sugar-coated conversation. Marina is getting into that raw, real shit. Her marriage ending, going no contact with her dad, falling into a relationship that she never saw coming in a million years. We are talking about what healing actually looks like. That it's not pretty, that it's not linear, that you can do all of this work for years and years and years and years, and your life still can become an absolute shit show. And that there's nothing to be ashamed about in that. This is what the healing journey actually looks like. So let's get on with the damn show, shall we? But first, let's talk about you. Yes, you need to damn the Join Shit Show, my online support community, where we have a minimum of 6 weekly Zoom support groups, where you can connect with our fellow shit shows who are doing the damn work to heal, where you can show up as your shit show ass self and feel seen, heard, and understood like never before. Okay, this is a support system at your fingertips, in your back pocket, for less than a damn dollar a day. For less than a damn dollar a day. So you, yes, you, the person who's been wanting to join for forever, enough already. You can quit after a month if you don't like it. See the link in the show notes, or you can go to adultchildpodcast.com/shitshow next. Give me a follow on Insta, on TikTok, at adultchildpod. And last but not least, whatever you do, please, 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 give me a damn 5-star rating on Apple, on Spotify. Thank you. Love you all. All right, y'all. Well, she's back. Marina Yanai Treiner.
No more Yanai. We should talk about that.
Marina Treiner. You know, good Lord, you were really on the very beginning. Let's see what episode number you were.
So long ago, yeah.
You were episode 26, man.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's
we're now
so crazy.
September 15th, 2021. 5 years ago. What the fuck? 5 years?
It doesn't feel that way at all. To me.
Me neither.
That's crazy.
It doesn't.
Yeah. There's been a lot of things, right?
Yes. And then you were back on in July of 2023. So yeah, we've shortened a name.
Yes, we have.
We no longer have to hyphen.
That's correct. I got divorced.
Walk me through that. Well, here's one thing I'll say. Is that when we do this work, I think so often, like when we have one person that embarks on this healing journey and the other partner doesn't, there's so many changes that happen that I think is really hard for the relationship to last and stay together. But it seemed like, you know, you guys were doing the work together, which was really cool to hear. There's a smirk on your face.
This is correct. This is just my perspective. This is the picture I'll paint. When we met, I was 23 years old. So we were together for 14 years. Yeah, I was a kid. We were both 23. And I had very severe, like the layer of trauma that I had was very severe and constant and palpable. And it wasn't personalized towards him. It was like about my first relationship, which was abusive. I was raped.
Yeah.
And he kind of showed up as a savior for me. And it was exactly what I needed at the time. And I'm so grateful, you know. My parents were checked out, as per usual. And so, yeah, he just really was so supportive in that time. And then, as you said, very correctly, I started doing very deep work, and then I got into somatic work. And I think he just lost his place. Like, the dynamic just totally shifted. He didn't know where he could enter, and I did not want to be rescued anymore. And when I say rescued, I mean the man like fed me with a spoon sometimes. Like, this is where the state that I was in. And so it was very hard to shift the dynamic. We couldn't do it. And I think that we had very different visions for life. And the way he does feel as a human, he feels that he does the work. Okay. So that's why the smirk, because we disagree on that, and that's fine. And so our visions for life were very different, and it was time to end that relationship. And it was a very, very, the hardest, I want to say the hardest, but then there's been actually harder things after that, interestingly, because as I arrived at that decision, I became very calm and clear by the time I arrived at it.
Yeah.
And afterwards, all hell broke loose in my life.
Okay, well, let's back up. When do you feel like the first time that you were able to actually consciously bring to light the thought that, like, I don't think this is working? And was it something you felt like you were in denial about for a long time?
Yes, my personality is very, like, I'm very stubborn in the sense of, like, if I have a goal, I use my mind. It's funny. Everybody's like, but you're a somatic coach. I'm like, I'm a fucking somatic coach because of this. Like, I have to work on this every day. This is how it works. So my mind is very strong, and I have a lot of willpower, and that's my personality. And so I'll be like so stubborn about something, you know? And I was like, this is my marriage. Like, leaving a marriage is a big, big deal. And I'm really glad that I fought for it and I tried every possible thing and all of that. In 2024, around April, a mutual friend of ours that was kind of a new friend, we met her on a retreat. She came to stay with us for 6 weeks. And I felt so bad because I think she allowed me to get there because she was so supportive and amazing and a very conscious, amazing human. And she just kind of was asking questions, you know? I mean, it's been years in the making, of course. And I tried to leave him many times, actually. And then he would fight back and not fight me, but just be like,
fight for the relationship.
Yeah, exactly. And so she just asked me questions. And I think having that support from an amazing person, we're still very good friends, I was able to separate from him. And at that time, which was crazy, like, I felt very guilty because here's a friend who came to enjoy and she's like dealing with me. And that's my trauma speaking. That's a very big part of my trauma, is like, I can't have issues, or I always have issues and I'm a burden and all this kind of shit. But she was amazing. And then like around a couple months later, I moved out and we were separated for like 6 months. That was the initial kind of stage. And like, looking at my family and the women in my family and my lineage, I'm like, of course this had to happen, because they are all so codependent. They are so fearful of being alone. And of course, Marina moves into a house by herself in the jungle, basically. Like, I feel kind of, I live kind of even removed from town, alone in a foreign country, foreign language, alone. That's my life, you know?
Weren't you guys doing like IFS couples therapy?
You're correct. It was great. I mean, the coach was really good, but I felt like there were vulnerabilities that would come out that my ex-husband actually made it worse. It actually made it worse. Like,
how so?
His vulnerabilities would come up and there wasn't like capacity to like hold it. And he it was a shit show. It was very, very hard. I felt like he projected a lot onto me. And I also felt, you know, I come from a background of deep relational trauma with men, and like my dad, who I don't talk to anymore. So that's another layer here. I'm estranged from my dad. And so I really wanted to be in control, and I wanted to have the power, and I wanted to like have the upper hand. And I think my ex-husband always felt that, and that was very unfair. And that felt minimizing, you know, and it was. So that's like my part of the story, you know.
Was there a period of time that you went through where almost like the panic or like the, I don't possibly see how I'm gonna get through this. And like, all of a sudden you have those moments where you're fine. And then all of a sudden it like hits you where you realize the reality of your situation and you're just like, fuck.
There were no fine moments for a lot of time. I thought I was gonna die. Like I actually, my body felt like I was going to die. And I think it's, you know, my mother is still with my dad.
Yeah.
And he is abusive and he's narcissistic. And she cannot fathom leaving. Mm-hmm. And I can so feel that in my own body, even though in a way I wasn't a classic codependent. Like I had my life, I had my friends, I had my passions. I really like had a beautiful, rich life. But there was such a big part of me that was like, I'm going to die without a man. Like I can't foresee living and breathing and surviving without a man. So I would just spend hours in grief. I mean, that was like literally 6 months of my life was on this porch in this house, sobbing and sobbing and sobbing. And when I decided to actually leave, and it's so strange because I gave myself 6 months. So I was like, I can't go back and forth here forever. Like, this is ridiculous. I have to come to a decision and I have to go with it. So I gave myself 6 months and that really helped. And I knew that my decision would feel very calm.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be like dramatic. It wouldn't be, you know, so difficult. And that's what happened. And interestingly, it came from, are you familiar with, this is a parts work modality. It's called inner relationship focusing.
Is that a type of couples therapy?
No.
I'm not sure if I'm familiar with it or not.
I think you should have this woman on your podcast.
I'd love to. What's her name?
Anne Weiser Cornell.
Okay.
I had her on my podcast. She's amazing. And it's one of my favorite parts work modalities. So she had a class. I had COVID. I was on my period. I was a shit show. Like true. Truly just like in my bed going through a separation, like kill me now, you know? And then there's this class, the Embody Lab was hosting her for a class. I remember it was nighttime. I was like, I have nothing better to do. Here we go. So, and it was all about, it was perfect for me because it was about parts of you that are stuck, that are like, they cannot make a decision. They're just like looping in a stuck place.
Mm.
And she asks this question of the part, how are you trying to help me?
Mm-hmm.
And I was in a very vulnerable place. Vulnerability, it's funny because I teach vulnerability, but it's always hard for me. You know, it's always like a work in progress. And I have a lot of walls and defenses. And because I was sick, I was just so vulnerable in that moment. Mm-hmm. And I sobbed. When she asked that question, I sobbed. And I was getting in touch with that part. And I had such clarity that I never was supported in my life. Like I was always the adult in mm-hmm. my family. I was the emotional adult always.
Mm-hmm.
And here comes a man who's like, you can cry on my shoulder, you know? And so I had a story that like, I can't handle life without him because he's the only person that supports me. And I never cried to my friends ever. Like there were like five people maybe who've seen me cry at that point. And it was such a like, such a deep knowing that like, first of all, I need to cry to my friends.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, he's not even supporting me well anymore. He really did, but not anymore. And third, like, this is a story, like this is an old story and I have to break it. And I cannot stay in this marriage for this one thing. Like that is not, you know what I mean? Like I have to leave. And then I grieved it really hard. And I think my parents were actually, it came shortly after, which was also interesting. And I felt all this grief, like, they've never shown up for me. And very, like when I was getting literally raped in their house
mm-hmm.
and they just didn't protect me. And it was so, so severe, like the damage and the fear that I had. So it was very powerful. And that just like, I just felt such peace. Like, oh yeah, I don't need to be in this marriage.
What did you say it was called? Interrelational focus?
Inner relationship focusing, but inner relationship means a relationship to yourself. It's very simple and there's usually one person guiding you and is basically just like letting you like sit with this part and create like that. You know, IFS has all these different names and parts, This one is much more simple. Mm-hmm. And you basically arrive into a state of curiosity to the part.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just ask it very basic questions. And one of my favorite question actually is, how are you trying to help me? I think that is such a brilliant question and such a shift, because I realized in that moment, oh yeah, it's like this little kid who's like, nobody's supporting me. And here's the one person that can, and I can't let go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How are you trying to help me? Like, what are you afraid is going to happen if you don't do this job anymore? Yeah, absolutely. Was there anything surprising that you learned about yourself, like through the process? Was this realization of, I've never felt supported by my parents my entire life, was that something kind of new that you really hadn't felt at that level?
For sure at that level. I mean, I was very aware, and my mom even acknowledged it. Like she said on a few occasions, like, you did that by yourself. Like, you uh-huh. dealt with this, with the assault, like assaults. It was years of assaults by yourself. So it wasn't kind of acknowledged.
Yeah.
But then I never realized like how responsible I've been, and mm-hmm. how I like bury all my emotions, and I never feel like I'm allowed to be struggling, and I'm always taking care of my parents emotionally. And I definitely did not realize the depth of abuse from my dad. Like, mm-hmm. I always thought like, yeah, he's selfish. You know, he's like that generation. He's been through a lot. He has been through a lot of trauma and stress in his life. And like, okay, he's just, you know, he's just a dad. You know, he's just like one of those dads that like doesn't know what grade I'm in and doesn't ask me how my day was because he's just talking about himself. But that's like what dads are, you know? But then like, oh shit, maybe not, you know? Like, why am I always feeling such a level of fear around him, like such a level of anxiety and fear? And I think that being in a marriage like covered all of this up. It was like, I'm okay. I have this man next to me. It's fine.
Would you have considered him to be the safer parent?
My dad?
Yeah.
No, it was always my mom. It was always my mom. He was definitely... I would never, that's the thing. Back then, I would never say he's unsafe. Now I'm like, of course he's unsafe, you know? And my mom too, in her own ways, because she's in such denial, such like severe denial. But all of this was unseen. And it's so funny because one of my best friends did a card reading for me. And the whole time, we're on Zoom, right? And the whole time I'm like, what does that card say? I can't see. She's like, I have a conclusion for you. You can't see something. And I'm just like, huh, okay. And holy shit, like, this marriage protected me from all this shit that I couldn't see, you know, that I had to face. Like, because after I left it, I was like, this is not happening again. I am not doing this again. I am not entering a relationship like this again. Wild card, I did. We could talk about that. Even worse, of course, because you have to really see it. But like, I'm not fixing a man again. And that's what I was trying to do. I was trying to fix him and tell him, this is how you do the work. And this is what you need to do. And this is how we're going to save this marriage. And like, he just, that's not his thing. Like, he's just not interested, you know? And people don't change for somebody else. We know that. We know that cognitively, however. So, you know, yeah, I saw a lot.
Yeah, it's really interesting to think about that, about how staying in these relationships or repeating patterns, it allows us to avoid facing other deeper truths in our lives, you know, like how being in a relationship allows us to be in denial about the reality of the relationship with our parents.
It's codependence. I mean, it's an addiction. It's like a drug. And I think every childhood trauma survivor has addiction of some kind.
Yep.
I was a workaholic. I overate for years and years and years. I was addicted to working out until I literally broke my body. Like all of this, something was like, you need to see all the ways that you're creating fake safety, and then you need to feel safe inside.
Yeah.
Like everything broke. My business broke down. I mean, literally every single thing I ever clung to, like externally for safety, just like disappeared within the span of like these 2 years. it's just been a shit show, essentially, you know?
I get it, girl. Me too.
Yeah.
So was there a pivotal moment as it relates to your dad? Was there a particular moment where you were like, holy shit, like I have not been seeing this clearly?
Yeah. So I went to visit a few months after telling my ex, like, I'm done. And he was like, you're really done. Like, there's no fighting for it. And I was like, 1000%. And he felt it and we were done. And so I came to visit and, you know, even though you know in your head that this house is not nurturing or in any way, you're still like thinking, oh, I'll be loved. I'll be like cared for after like the hardest year of my entire life. Maybe, possibly, is that going to happen? No. So all my friends are like, Marina, don't stay there. Don't stay there. It's not a good it's not a good place for you. Like, and I'm just in this denial, right? No, it's fine. I can handle it. It's fine. Okay. So I go. And of course, there are many moments with my dad, but this one stands out. Like, I am sitting with my mom in the kitchen and I'm crying because I'm processing a lot of shit. And my mom is like talking me through it and being really sweet and wonderful. And he comes in and he laughs, he makes a joke, and he changes the subject. And so I go up to him and I'm like, Dad, you know, that's really hurtful and it makes me feel invisible. And I remember saying it like I was very regulated. Like I said it from my heart. And he was like, okay, yeah, okay. And then like 2 days later, he does the same thing. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? And you know, as a kid, when my dad would blow up at me and throw things at me, like this was justified by everybody, and it still is, by my entire family. And my mom is always like, you know, he's just so sensitive, which he is. He's just so sensitive and he can't handle when you cry from that perspective. Like, it's just so hard for him. And I'm like, bullshit. And I bought that my whole life. And I was like, no. I'm literally telling him, I'm being vulnerable. I'm telling him how this feels for me. And he is still doing it. No. And then... oh my God. I went on a trip with one of my best friends. And on that trip, we went up north actually to Mendocino. So beautiful. And it was so wonderful. Like I felt so nourished. And I come home to the airport and like I just remember thinking, like, oh, I just feel so good. Like I needed this, you know? And then I also remember thinking, it's gonna get fucked up right now. Like I just knew it. And so my parents come to pick me up and you know, they're immigrants. They have all this like immigrant trauma. So they never park at the airport because it costs money. So they have to like do rounds. Loop around. And of course, all the pressure is on me that I have to come out of the door of the airport at the exact moment that they are there. And if not, they flip out. And it's always this feeling. It's always this feeling that like, if I'm not there exactly when they're there, like I'm going to get shit for it. So my dad is already like on edge, pissed off. He opens the trunk of the car. There's nothing there. I have my little suitcase and like a little bag, like literally a little bag. So I put the little bag in the corner of the trunk and then he's like, take it out. And I'm like, why? It's like, there's no room. And I'm like, literally the whole fucking trunk. Like, are you serious? And I'm like laughing. So he takes my bag with rage and throws it on the ground of the airport. Puts the luggage in and gets in the car. And I'm like, what the fuck? And then I get in the car and he goes, don't gaslight me. And I'm like, what is happening right now? And it just got worse and worse in the house. Oh, you're gonna love this. I started going to ACA. So one of my really good friends, she's amazing. She's a therapist. She's like, you need to go to ACA. And she was becoming estranged from her family. And she's also Ukrainian, which is crazy. And she's like, you need to go to ACA. And I was like, no. And she's like, yes, like go. So I go to ACA and I'm telling my mom about this. So excited. I'm like, I went to ACA. It's so good. I just feel I'm so understood, you know? And she's like, what does it stand for? And I tell her, the dysfunction part, right? This, and she's like, what are you talking about? We're not dysfunctional. And I'm like, okay, but we are, you know? And she loses her shit. Like, we come home from the walk. She won't talk to me for like a day, like total silent treatment. And I'm like, Mom, like, let's talk. And she's basically like, you know, you knew that was going to hurt me and you set it to hurt me. And I'm like, no, I was literally just telling you what I'm doing with my life. I don't have to talk about it with you, you know, but it's like that thing of like, I have to carry all the responsibility always for everybody's fucking emotions. And so I was like, I can't be here. Like, this house is a madhouse, you know, it's dysfunctional. And so one of my best friends was like, come stay at my house. And I left and I never returned since.
Did you tell your father directly that you were going no contact, or how did that happen?
No, I was like packing my bags. I just wanted to do it peacefully. Mm-hmm. And it was my grandma's birthday and we were like going to celebrate without my dad, like my mom and my grandma and me. And my mom comes in the room and she's like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm just going to go stay with a friend, you know? And she's like, no, 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 no. You cannot go. And I'm like, mom, like, this is a good thing for me. I need to go stay with a friend. And she goes, don't abandon me. You're abandoning me.
Mm.
And oh, like it hurts so bad. And then I remember just like, so I went to my grandma's birthday thing and then I was driving to my friend's house and I am sobbing because I feel so guilty, like towards my mom. I just said bye to my dad. I just like was like, bye. I didn't say anything. And then he texted me, I think that week, and he was like, can we go for a walk and talk? And I said, I don't feel safe around you. And he said, I don't feel safe around you either. Okay, that's it. No, nothing since.
When was that?
Over a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, for me, one of the more painful things than just the relationship that I've had with my dad is feeling like my mom has not like stood
protected.
Up, protected. Like that's like almost even more hurtful than that, you
Absolutely.
Know, just like watching the ways in which she's just like sat by. And this is just like one example, but like, so my parents have a house in Tahoe and for the longest time, I wasn't allowed to have a key to the house. I mean, it sits empty for more than half the year and I was living, you know, 3 hours away and here I am, I'm 10 years sober, I'm responsible. And my dad's reasoning for not wanting me to have a key has nothing to do with reality, but it has to do with money and
control.
And yeah. And my mom not agreeing with my dad's decision, but not fighting for me, you know, and it's not about the house, but just to like not fight for me. Like that's really fucking hurtful. Like that hurts more than not my dad not wanting me to have a key.
I completely resonate with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very, very, very painful. And maybe, I don't know if you resonate with this. I think I had a different idea in my head. Like I had to hold like this image of my mom that was not really real. And like, I remember even writing like as a kid, I have such a strong mom and all these things. And then I'm like, I really don't. Like she's weak, you know, and accepting that, like, just like, this is who she is. This is my mother. I have to accept it. It was like, it felt like my mom died. Like that's how it felt.
Yeah. It's such a fucked up dynamic for me because it was like, my mom was the alcoholic, but my mom was also the safer parent.
Wow.
And my dad and I the only time that we bonded or I felt an act like that he was actually emotionally available to me was when she was drunk and emotionally unavailable to him. The trauma bond there, like in order for me to feel connected to my dad, that required my mom to be, you know, disconnected and unavailable to me, you know?
Wow.
And then like feeling like he wasn't protecting me from her, but then at the same time feeling like she wasn't protecting me from him. And then just like the whole dynamic of when they're in that codependent dynamic, the enmeshment and the fact that like it's really impossible for anyone to get out of that situation because if somebody starts to climb out, the other person is just grabbing their leg and pulling them back down.
Yes. So much like dysfunction and it's like a web. It's a web and it depends on everybody like buying into it. And then one person, like if you come out, then people lose their shit because they're like, oh my God, you're showing me something I don't want to see. I just want to keep this going, right? Like this, I don't know. It's just, it's like a cult almost. Like there's elements to it that feel like a cult.
Yeah. And also too, just like the level of denial. Like I've been going through this really fucking weird experience with my parents where, I mean, their alcohol is, especially for the past 10 years, both of them. I mean, it's been horrible, like horrible health problems. I mean, I don't even know how my mom is still alive. And for, I don't know how long it's been, maybe since the past like 6 months or so, they've both stopped drinking and they're not doing anything else. And they're just like, they just seem fine. Like it's such a mind fuck. Like this is like 30, 40 plus years of alcoholism. And all of a sudden they just like stop. And then they just seem like they're fine.
Because they're not addressing all the reasons that they have been drinking.
Yeah, but how are they not crazy? It's insane. It's like fucking maddening, you know? And it's like, yes. Here I am. I've been sober for 17 years. I've been doing all this work. And I'm like, I'm not fine.
I know. And it's like, what's cool. Wrong? What's wrong with us?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Lord. The denial is just mind-boggling.
I want that. I want that. Yeah. Give me some of that.
You know what? Sometimes I engage in, I call it mindful dissociation, but like the denial stuff, I just, there's like something I think with cycle breakers like us that we can't fucking stand lies or like this. Yeah. Like gaslighting, all of it. Like I remember like I'm talking to my mom and I'm like, and I'm trying to prove to her why it makes sense that I don't talk to my dad, which of course I discovered is pointless, of course. But that was a period of time. And so I'm like, Mom, remember when you guys were in Costa Rica and we were walking on the street and my dad swallowed a bug and he was like choking on it. And I told him, just swallow it. It'll be easier for you. And he just started screaming at me. Fuck you. You're making fun of me. Do you remember that? And she's like, no. And I'm like, are you serious? Like you were next to us. And she goes, do you think I have dementia? And I'm just like, what is happening?
It's really hard. Well, I love that you're talking about all this because here's the deal. It's like you do so much work and then the shame that comes with like, I shouldn't be struggling or I should be further along. And then you look at other people, you know, and you're like, how do they have it all together? And it's like, I don't think they do. I just don't think that they show the struggle. They just don't show the struggle.
Exactly. And you know what? It's funny because this past year, I finally realized what Enneagram number I am, which is one, which is very interesting, which is like basically the perfectionist, like good girl, right? And that's kept me safe. Like that's always been like my mask. And it's funny because like in the last 2 weeks, I want to say, I've had multiple conversations of people being like, and me saying, I really struggle with XYZ. And then they're like, don't you teach other people that? And I'm like, ouch, that hurts. And then I'm like, wait, no. This is a sign of my literal growth because the old me would just never say it. I would never say it out loud. No. And I need to be perfect. I need to like have all my shit together, never struggle. Just, I'm fine. I'm good. How are you? You know? I'm here to help you. I'm here to coach you. I'm here, you know? And so, yeah, it's been like every time I'm like, ouch, but also like, this is good. This is good news. Like I'm growing. And I mean, I've been so much more vulnerable. I've cried with like all my friends, like they've seen me fall apart. I have asked for help. Even when I'm like terrified, I've told people like what I need. I've told people I need you to check in on me every day because I'm literally alone. And I'm going through a lot of shit and I need you to text me every day. And like the old me would never say what I need or want, you know, like never. And I've like kicked out a lot of toxic people from my life or even just not necessarily always toxic. Sometimes just what are you at? What do you? What
yeah, good, not what no value add.
Yeah, exactly. Like I want people and I have so many friends, which is amazing because I don't have a family, basically. And yeah, so. I don't know, just have to throw in some of the good, but I really hear you. And I think people don't talk about the struggle. It's a perfectionist culture, like happy ending, all is well, you know?
And I think too, how much of the healing occurs in the mess, that is really when the deep healing and growth occurs when I kind of take those steps backward and maybe start engaging in like behaviors or patterns that I thought I was past. That's really the moments when the healing happens. And I think a lot of people just aren't willing to talk about that.
Well, let me tell you something.
Please do.
If you want a healthier home without the hassle, meet Canopy, beautifully designed wellness essentials for cleaner air, fresher water, and everyday self-care, including humidifiers, air purifiers, shower, bath, and faucet filters. From clean, filtered moisture to help support restful sleep, to filters that help reduce chlorine for softer skin and hair, Canopy upgrades your and your family's daily routines with products that are easy to use and maintain. Shop getcanopy.co and use code podcast at checkout for 10% off your order.
Yep, this is good stuff. So as I totally agree. And I think it's also how we respond in a new way in that moment, right? Yeah. Like, oh, I'm in my pattern. So I think the fixing thing has been very tough to break. And when I left my parents' house and I moved into my friend's house, I'll make this short. It's a very long story, but
as much depth as you want to. Go for it, girl.
There's a lot of depth to it. But I basically met a guy who was homeless and a drug addict and fell in love with him. And, you know, there were beautiful parts to it, definitely. And there were, of course, as expected. Yeah.
Let me just tell you this. I was like in a relationship with an active alcoholic for 9 months, still doing the podcast and in the most insane trauma bond relationship, feeling so sane yet so insane, like watching yourself in it, being completely incapable of pulling yourself out of it. So I get all of it. But you can't just say I met a homeless drug addict. Like, I need to know how this happened.
Okay. I wrote a book about it. I don't know if I'll actually publish it. It might be just for me. I was driving home from Goodwill because I love Goodwill. And I was 3 minutes from my friend's place. And I saw this guy on the street, and I love talking to homeless people. I just always have.
Me too.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. But I just had the strongest intuition, like I have to go there. And it was nighttime. And so—
Was he holding a sign? Like, what was he doing?
No, he was just sitting there.
Okay. And obviously homeless?
Yeah. Very clear. Yeah. him and another guy. And it was like, I'm going to go help this guy I don't know. I didn't even have a thought. It was just like, I have to go there. I have to. So I make a U-turn. I go and I sit with him and we started talking. And it was 3 minutes from the house. So like every day talking, like sitting and talking, you know. And what I love, I think, about homeless people is like many, I'm not saying all of them, but many of them just don't give a shit. And they're just real. Like, this is what's going on. This is what I feel, whatever. And I think I fell in love with him right away. Like, it was instant. Like,
well, what was the story? How do you end up there?
Drugs, addiction, trauma. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. what is the
fucking story? How long
had
he been homeless?
2 years.
Okay.
Yeah. Super, super wise, deep, hot mess.
How old?
He was 40.
Okay.
Good.
And had he had like, what was life before that? Like, was he somebody who was like,
oh, yeah. Like
a member of society.
Uh-huh. Yeah. He had a kid. He was married. He was had a house, all the things. Like, yeah.
Was it opiates?
No, he was an alcoholic. And then it was meth on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And I have had nothing to do with it, like that kind of addiction in my life. Mm-hmm. Nothing. So I knew nothing, but a friend of mine like met him too with me. Like she came to like meet him before I was like, I'm into this guy, right? I'm into this guy, but I'm not caught. I'm not saying it, right? She got it fast. She was like, what the fuck is going on here? You know? And I'm like, nothing. Okay. And she's like, I just want you to know I get it. I see this. I get it. Like, go for it. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You
know?
Yeah, there was this unbelievable connection. Like, I have never in my life connected with a human on this level in my life. It was like, and that's the mind fuck, you know, it was like the most deep, like he saw me like no one in my life. And I saw him, like, we just saw each other. We got
and it was
other.
Real.
It was so real. And he had these beautiful parts to him, like beautiful, sweet, like extremely tender human. Mm-hmm. And then, which I got to experience a lot of, and then total polar opposite.
Yeah.
In the same person. And yeah. I don't know if it's addiction, if it, you know, I don't know, but they were both there. So long story short, we stay together. He gets housing. He gets sober by himself.
What do you mean we stay together?
Like I left San Diego. I came back home, but we were talking every day. Like we were in a relationship.
How did he have a phone?
Obamacare.
Okay.
Shitty phone. Doesn't have, like, a mess. You know, like, we're talking. He's, like, sitting on the street. I mean, yeah. Just a mess. And he got housing. And he would just kind of peace out for, like, days.
And would you lose it?
Fucking lose it. Like, yeah. Can't function. Cannot yeah. function.
Yeah, like, total can't, emotional flashback.
Oh,
like,
my God. Oh. Just cannot function. I said, look.
There's nothing more miserable than that feeling.
Horrific.
There's like, nothing
I,
more miserable.
I felt like I'm dying. I'm going to die.
Yeah.
First time it happened, my friend ended up going. It was 3 days. My friend ended up going and finding him. And he was like so grateful. Like he cried. It's his shit, right? Like it is his shit. He's like, I lost my phone. I'm like, okay. Like it's deeper than this. You're doing this now like three times. Whatever. And in the end, he got housing from the military because he was a Marine in the past. Mm-hmm. And he was in this housing and it was looking good. You know, he got sober. He had to get sober by himself from meth. Like, holy shit.
Was he going to meetings?
No, nothing. This is like second week sober.
Okay.
And he gets all this stuff from the street, from this woman who had his stuff from the street. And there was all this meth in it. And he just, you know, of course. Mm-hmm. And doesn't talk to me for 24 hours. And so I'm like, you know, it's okay that you relapsed. Like, I wasn't thinking that you're never going to relapse. Like, come on, dude. And he's in a shame spiral, right? And I was like, but it's not okay you didn't talk to me. Like, this was like my one boundary, one need in this relationship, right? And he is just going off on like, you need to encourage me. You need to encourage me. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, you fucked up. Like, take ownership of this. Zero, none. So I break up with him. I break up with him. I don't talk to him. But I'm always like, how is he doing? Like, is he okay? Like, not from other people that I know that know him. And then one day a friend, I mean, he was his friend, not my friend, but you know, I was in contact with this guy. He just sends me a screenshot of jail records.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, all right. Okay, cool. He's in jail. Okay. So he broke his apartment, you know, just lost his shit. And so I visited him in jail. Like, he's sober. Let's see how he is, you know. And it was an experience. We don't need to go into it. But he, you know, he was the same kind of in this kind of same place, like mentally, emotionally, of in terms mm-hmm. of responsibility. And then again, I'm like, no, I can't. No contact with you. But we were kind of sometimes sending letters to each other. And then very recently, a couple weeks ago, you know, he's been sober 8 months, almost 7 months. He's been in jail. And I'm like, okay, let's see. Like, you know, so we had a conversation. We had like a video call. And I expected him to apologize. That did not happen, of course, because that's what I needed to learn. And it was a really hard conversation. And so I walked away from the whole thing recently. And it's just, yeah, it's really interesting because I understood like, oh, I've been wanting my dad to apologize, right? I've been wanting my dad to take accountability and change and all this stuff. And I'm like looking for all these men to do it. And so, yeah, that's the lesson. And he's taught me so much, like so. I mean, no human has ever taught me more. And I have this theory that the people we are most in love with are the ones that have the most lessons for us. And when the lessons end, and they don't always have to be so shitty and dark, I hope. But some of them are just like safe and nice, you know, But he, like, I knew that my attachment to him was like all the lessons I have to learn. And I think I feel that they're complete now. And that's why I like walked away, and it wasn't easy, but it was like, yeah, it's the time.
I'll be curious to see what sort of awarenesses and insights you have when you have a little bit more space from the situation, because I'm wondering if you're seeing clearly enough this deep sort of connection with him, like how much of that is kind of maybe a fantasy in your head.
I think that's there. I think, yeah, it's a very good question. And maybe I don't have a full answer yet, because I was actually asking myself that, like, because this is what I know love to be. Like,
exactly.
The love that I know is very like abusive, right? Mm-hmm. And painful, like very painful. So like my body and my wiring associates like so much pain with being loved.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, but I think it's complex. Like I do think it's complex, because there is a layer of just like souls meeting. You know, I do think that's always going to be there. I see that with my ex-husband too. Like, I don't think we had a healthy relationship, but souls met, you know, souls met and loved each other.
Yeah.
And in this instance, it's the same. I think there's a layer to that, but I think 1000% it's like addiction. It's me trying to rescue. It's all these like patterns that I had to see like so, so clear. And in the moment when I expected accountability and there was like zero, and he does not have the capacity for that. Right.
Yeah. Now. Or even just like having the expectation of like that he's going to apologize. It's like a delusional expectations that we put on someone, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so funny because I called him delusional and it really triggered him. And then I was like, you know what? I'm actually also delusional here. Like, you know, but it's also like, I'm also holding this kind of lightly, like it's okay that I had that desire. Like,
oh, 100%. You should listen to my first episode back in September. Like I went through my whole experience of this.
Well, yeah.
I'd be curious if you listen to it and see like what you can relate to. A big part of it for me was there were still these younger parts of me that still had not fully accepted that we didn't save mom. Just felt like a total and utter failure, like for not doing so.
Yeah, I think this guy held both my parents. Like,
yeah.
That's why it was so intense. It was like the sweetness of my mom, because my mom really sees me. And we have a real connection. My mom and I have a very strong connection. Like, she's not just my mom. It's like a soul connection, you know? I mean, it's not everybody has that. And that's why that loss has been so hard. It's not just like, oh, my mom. It's like she was my person, like in every way. And he was like that in a way, like, you know, I mean, he had that. And then, of course, the like, I can't make my mom see the dysfunction. I can't make him see the dysfunction. Yeah. Like that is his choice. That is his journey. I don't know where he's going to end up. Like I truly don't. And I think I've come to like quite a deep acceptance that he might end up on the street again. He might, like, I don't know. Right. I have no control. I have no effect on that. Like that is completely his story. But then also, like, of course, like you're saying, this little girl who always tried to save my mom, who tried to be like get out of this marriage or like take care of yourself or all these different things. Of course, that showed up. And my dad, when my dad was really young, and when I was like a baby, he was a great dad. And then he couldn't stand me anymore when I showed him I was a mirror for him, and he couldn't stand it. I triggered the shit out of him. And it was the same with this guy, you know, as long as I'm encouraging him and I'm being sweet and basically like a little kid, like little kids don't really, babies don't put mirrors to you. Yep. I think mostly. But as soon as I was like boundary, like not okay. Like, no, he can't handle it. So it's, you know,
it's almost like with an addiction of like, you're trying to go back to when you used to be able to use where like, it wasn't problematic. You know, it's like, you're trying to get back to that place of like before your dad turned on you. And then I think also too, it's like a nervous system grasping for the oldest role that it knows.
Yeah, that's such a good point. That's so true. Yeah. Like what was the nice, the honeymoon period, right? Like where is that? Yeah. And I just feel really proud that as soon as I noticed fucked up behavior, I left. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not, I did not put up with it in this case. I mean, in the past I have. So this is my progress, right? Yes, I attracted this kind of person. Mm-hmm. That's true. That is true. But I also, like, as soon as, you know, I set a boundary and he didn't respect it, I was like, I'm out. And then the love was still there, very much so. And so I was like, I have to check. I have to, you know, I have to see where he's at. And again, like blindness, just I'm out. And so those are really hard decisions for me to make. I'm a I'm like an idealist. I'm driven by my heart. I want this beautiful love story, like all this stuff, you know, all this like La La Land delusion, like you said, totally. And like, yeah, I'm like really proud that I wasn't like turning a blind eye like I used to like the things that he's said. And, you know, even one call, I'm like, done. Like, no.
Well, I think it's even just being able to see it too.
Yes. Sometimes we can't because it's too much. And it reminds us so much of like our childhood and what we were taught was safe. I call it like familiar and heady safety versus embodied safety, because your body does not feel safe when it's unsafe, period. Like, even if it's familiar to you, there is a layer of anxiety that is always there.
And it's really just not that easy. Like, it's really not that easy. Like, when you're in, like, it's a trauma bond. It doesn't matter how long you've been healing or what you know, or even if you can see it, that will always override the conscious mind. Like, when you literally have a part of you that feels like you're going to fucking die without this connection or without this person, I think it is like the most, it's like one of the deepest addictions there is.
Yeah, I read this book. Oh my gosh, I'm going to forget. Women Who Love Too Much.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I was reading. I was like, oh my God, I'm literally an addict. That was, I don't know, 6 months ago or something. And yeah, I think it is one of, because think about it. This is, what is our first, like, safety, our first connection? It's like with our moms, right? Like that bond. And then when it was fucked up, like, we're always looking to replace that on some level. And I think everybody does. And everybody has toxic elements, right? I mean, every relationship has elements that need to be worked on. But yeah, I think it's it is really, 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 really hard to navigate. Yeah.
Because it's like an addiction that is like at this attachment and nervous system level.
Yes.
You know, it is like so deeply encoded into our body and our brains and everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's no fucking joke.
Oh my God, no. And I just feel, I so clearly feel like I had to have this kind of person, such an extreme. It was a very, very extreme.
Oh, it happened for a reason.
Yeah. It was very extreme. And it was like, this is how beautiful it can be. And this is how fucked up it can be, all in one person. And this is how hard we're going to make it for you to leave this person, because there's so much beauty there. And literally, like, a day before our call, he sends me the most beautiful letter I've received in my life. And I'm like, of course, like, in the span of 2 days, like, there's this letter that I just feel so, like, seen, like, to such a high degree, and then crash, you know? And so it's like that choice point of like, no, I'm going to choose myself, even though it's scary, it's hard, it's all the feelings, and then lean into my people that I created, like the network of people that are actually sane and good and show up and all the good things, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's just really important that you're talking about this and that we're talking about this, because I want people to know there's nothing shameful or embarrassing about any of this.
It's life.
And it's how we grow. And it has to happen. These lessons, for me, it has to be excruciatingly painful.
Me too. Maybe because we're very strong and we can deal with anything, but then it has to be so fucking bad that we're like, have you read, Not Into the River. God damn it. Elizabeth Gilbert.
No, somebody sent it to me, but I haven't read it yet.
Oh my God. That was such a hard read. And I really recommend. I really, really, it's about her relationship with an addict, you know? And here she is after writing, you know,
Eat, Pray, Love.
Everything's okay now because I haven't read it, but everybody like says that. And she even writes it in the book and she's talking about her love addiction in the book. And it's just so like so humbling, right? Like she, like people looked up to her. People thought she found the oracle of like relational bliss. But she is so real in that book. Like she is so real and honest. And I was just so moved by that. Like, wow. Like talking about literally, there were times she wanted to like literally kill her partner. Like literally, not even figuratively, right? And it's like these feelings, like we are so human.
Yeah. We are. And it's really hard for people to like comprehend it all unless they've experienced it and lived it. Like a lot of people can't comprehend like how it could possibly be difficult to walk away from situations like this. And it's like,
wow,
if you haven't lived it, like you just don't get it.
Yeah. I think it's one of the hardest forms of addiction. And also from what I've read and even like research, like it is one of the roughest addictions that there are.
How has this changed the way that you work with other people?
I think there's a lot more compassion.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot more. I used to kind of feel it. I never pushed my clients to any decision. Obviously, that's not what I do. But in the back of my head, there would be like such a clear, like, this is what you should do, right? And now I just don't have that. Like, I just don't believe that any decision, there's never a right decision because everybody's in their process. And I'm here to be in it with them. And that's it. Like, I am not here to fix it. I'm not here to give them the answer. I'm not here to even make them have an answer. It's like, oh, it's like, you know what I think of is like, when you're a child, when you're like, say, when I was a teenager and I was going through this like horrific trauma by myself, what did I need? Like, what would have made it like less horrific, right? It's like, okay, wait, I have a more grounded example. So the other day I'm driving in beautiful Costa Rica that everybody thinks I'm sitting on the beach sipping coconuts, but that is not reality. So I am driving and I'm taking a shortcut, which I shouldn't have taken, but whatever. And the road is horrific. And I'm like going uphill and my car just slides down and down and down and down, you know, and I end up in a ditch. Like I end up sitting with my dog, with my car in a ditch. And I'm like, I cannot fucking deal with this right now. No way. Are you fucking kidding me? Like, okay. So I take off my seatbelt and I go look and like my car is fine somehow, you know, because it slid slowly. And I'm just sitting there and I literally, I'm like, God, I don't want to deal with it. I cannot deal with this in this moment. Make it better, please. Like literally seconds later, these two trucks of men, I'm not joking, show up. And this is why I love Costa Ricans are the most amazing people. And they pull me out for free. 30 minutes of their day and they're smiling and they're super sweet. And then this grandma comes and she's like standing with me on the side of the road. And she's like, you see that guy? He's really cute. And he's really nice. And he's very well educated. I'm like, are you literally trying to like sell me this man right now? Like, and she's just being really cute. And so my point in telling this story is it was a stressful situation, right? I'm alone. I'm in a ditch, right? Like literally, but all these people like show up and then I was so happy. Like I felt blissed out after. Like I wasn't traumatized. I wasn't sad. I wasn't distressed. I was like, oh my God, like people show up for you in this life, you know? And they're so kind. And that's like what I feel that we all need, like as a corrective experience with me as a practitioner. Like that's who I want to be for people. I want to be like, I want to show them, oh, I can go through rough shit, but like it doesn't feel rough anymore. Like it feels beautiful, it feels supportive. And then that's an example for them for their other relationships, like their friendships and whatever. Like this is how it can be. Like this is how good and compassionate and soothing. So that's become like my goal, you know, with my clients.
I love that. Is there anything that you want to promote or push or sell or?
When are you?
I'm going to do it this week.
Oh, amazing. Yes. I have a group program. It's called the Unburdened Heart. Mm. And it's launching again next month. And it's basically all around. It's for people who are overgiving, over-responsible, kind of they seem to have their shit together on the surface, but there's a lot going on inside. They're very like anxious or stressed, or, you know, they can feel the effects of that trauma. And it's 3 months long, and we basically like move through somatic practices and teachings on self-compassion, on nervous system regulation, on emotional healing, like all the core things that I teach on.
Is it for women or co-ed?
Everybody.
Anybody, yes. And everybody?
Yes. Mm. It's a really, well, it's small, it's sweet, like we get to interact a lot and like really like heal together, you know?
Well, I just want to say, I was not expecting this homeless drug addict story. It really fed my soul. It really fed my soul. I think it was so important for people to hear this. It's nice to hear you share this after what I shared 6 months ago.
And I also wonder if like, if you think of our first episode versus now, I feel like I was so put together back then.
Yeah.
Like,
I think that we had no fucking clue what we're talking about. We both thought we were like so much more healed. And I hope we're not going to have that experience again in another 5 years. We're reflecting back on this episode. Like, wow, we didn't know shit.
I think that we knew shit, but we also had to deepen.
We had to live some more shit. So.
Well, sorry, not sorry. I think it will just keep happening, you know? Evolving, but maybe it'll feel softer. Like, that is my hope for us.